We begin as we ended last week with so-called race and intelligence. Elizabeth Canning spoke of the AAAS about her paper in the journal Science.
So in this study, we surveyed 150 STEM faculty across many different STEM disciplines. And we asked them to tell us whether they thought students could improve their intelligence or whether intelligence is something that can't really be changed much. And we wanted to see whether faculty's beliefs about intelligence were associated with students' performance in their courses. So we looked at the grades of every single student that these faculty members taught over a two-year time period, which ended up being over 15,000 student records. And what we found was really striking. So when faculty endorsed more of a growth mindset, all students on average earned higher grades. They performed better in these courses. And this was especially true for Black, Hispanic, and Native American students. So essentially, the racial achievement gaps in these courses were cut in half when the faculty member endorsed more of a growth mindset. So stigmatized students contend with cultural stereotypes that link their racial identity to lower levels of ability. So when their professors believe that intelligence is something that can be developed and improved, that provides a pathway to success for all students and can be especially motivating for stigmatized students. So we wanted to know, do students experience these classes differently? So we looked at course evaluations, and we found that students definitely noticed a difference in the learning environment. So they detected different behaviors from their professors. When their professor endorsed more of a growth mindset, students observed that these faculty were more likely to emphasize learning and development in their courses. And then students reported more motivation in these courses. And they were also more likely to recommend these courses to others. So this makes sense, because why would you want to engage in learning strategies that challenge you if your professor doesn't think that you can improve? So what we're finding is that faculty with more of a growth mindset are providing students with a pathway to success by emphasizing learning and development strategies rather than fixed ability. And faculty's growth mindset beliefs are associated with higher grades for all students on average, and especially for Black, Hispanic, and Native American students. And this is really important to identify because it reveals an important lever for intervention. Faculty have a unique opportunity to shape students' experiences in STEM courses. And what we're finding in this research is that endorsing a growth mindset may be an integral part of this.
Robin Williams, ABC Australia. I'm reminded to some extent of the Flynn effect, which showed some time ago that a nation's IQ can go up 10 points, although some places it's stabilized. Do you think you may have shown, through your efforts, ways in which the Flynn effect might operate?
Yeah, I think this whole idea about the Flynn effect is fascinating. We also have an old idea of the Pygmalion effect, right? That the way that faculty believe and think about their students actually can create the very behaviors that they anticipate in students through their beliefs. And I think that you're right, that this could potentially be one way, if faculty endorse more growth mindset beliefs and actually believe intelligence to be changeable, that it can be improved, that you can actually grow your intelligence, that students all across the board are motivated by that and actually show better performance. So if that's what we are showing here, then it's a really optimistic view, right? That faculty can really have an impact on students' motivation and performance in this way. If I believe you can change and grow, I see the evidence in front of me that you're doing so.
Mary Murphy and Elizabeth Canning from Indiana speaking at the AAAS in Washington, D.C. about their paper in the journal Science. And the Flynn effect, that a nation or group's IQ goes up 10 points every decade, comes from psychologist James Flynn at the University of Otago in Dunedin, New Zealand. Back to the AAAS.
My name's Brian Donovan, and our whole symposium today is going to address this larger issue that science is a human endeavor, and throughout history, the science of genetics has been used to support prejudiced views about human difference, and it's also been used to challenge those same views. And we're going to argue, therefore, that teaching about human genetic variation is not a socially neutral endeavor in our society, and that if we want to do a good job educating students about human biological difference, we need to attend to the social and also the quantitative complexities of research on human genetic variation.
Brian Donovan is a research scientist at Colorado Springs.
Today I'm going to argue that biology education can affect the development of racial prejudice. So I've conducted 6 randomized control trials with around 1,300 middle and high school biology students. And these studies demonstrate that depending on what we teach students about human genetic variation and how we teach it, it can lead to increases or decreases in cognitive forms of prejudice among adolescent age students. two related misconceptions about human genetic variation could affect the development of prejudice. One example of a misconception is that people of the same racial group are genetically uniform in their variable DNA. Another example of a misconception is that racial groups categorically differ in their variable human DNA as well. Now, if a student develops the misconception that people of the same race are genetically uniform, then that could affect the development of stereotyping because stereotypes imply that all people within a group are the same. And if a kid develops the idea that racial groups categorically differ in their variable DNA, that could facilitate stereotyping by leading students to believe that human racial groups differ in all kinds of other meaningful ways because of genetics. And so in three recently published randomized control trials, I've shown that when students read textbooks discussing the prevalence of genetic diseases in different racial groups, so diseases like sickle cell anemia and cystic fibrosis, it can affect the development of racial prejudice by leading students to infer that racial groups differ in intelligence and academic ability because of genetics. And that, of course, is a problem because these students are not learning about intelligence in textbooks when they're reading about human genetic diseases. These effects appear to be an unintended consequence of learning about differences in the prevalence of genetic diseases. So students are making these inferences on their own. And I think that raises an interesting possibility, which is that if genetics education affects the development of racial prejudice through its impacts on how kids understand human genetic variation, then by teaching students more accurate understandings of human genetic variation, we might be able to run that process in reverse and reduce racial prejudice. And so what I'm talking about is helping kids develop a more accurate model of human genetic variation. So in reality, people of the same group are genetically variable in their variable DNA. And people of different groups, while they do differ, they don't differ as drastically as many people might think. So that's not to ignore the fact that there are group-level differences. It's just to help kids contextualize it better. In a soon-to-be-published paper in the journal Science Education, my research team is reporting the results of three additional randomized control trials. And those studies show that when we teach students about the quantitative and social complexities of human genetics variation research, we can actually reduce stereotyping and the belief among students that racial groups differ in intelligence or academic ability because of genetics. And so what I mean by that is if we teach kids these accurate models of human genetic variation and we explain to them why the models are biologically flawed, then we can reduce prejudice. And I think what all this boils down to is that teaching about human genetic variation in our society, it's not socially neutral, and I don't think we should treat it that way. My research is beginning to show that biology education can either increase or decrease cognitive forms of racial prejudice, and I think that's one reason why we have to be really careful to communicate the nuance and complexity of genomics research when we're teaching the public about genomic science. Thank you.
Brian Donovan from Science Learning, Colorado Springs.